When you actually do the math, industrial real estate alone accounts for about 4% of all U.S. energy consumption. So said differently, energy and sustainability, I think, is often overlooked at the asset level because there's not a ton of demand side opportunity outside of an LED. But at the portfolio level, there's more opportunity than any other sector.
Link Logistics is determined to disrupt sustainability for industrial real estate. And with 3,500 properties and 10,000 customers nationwide, there's no question that they can have a big impact. Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm your host, Therese Fitzgerald. My guest for this episode is Sam Stockdale, Head of Sustainability for Link Logistics, which, as you may know, is Blackstone's industrial platform. Stockdale and I discussed Link Logistics' ambitious carbon reduction goals, its agreement with Carrier for advanced energy metering and monitoring, and its drive to control and manage the utilities at its properties. Here's my interview. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining me on Sustainability Street.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sam, Link Logistics is not your first job in sustainability. Tell us how you came to sustainability work and how you came to the company.
Well, I came to Link Logistics by way of JP Morgan, where I ran operational sustainability globally for their corporate real estate. And then prior to that, I was the director of portfolio operations for Tishman Speyer, who is a leading global real estate developer and owner operator. But being in the kind of financial industry in New York City and in the sustainability space, I found myself fortunate enough to be in conversations with Blackstone. And so they asked me to meet their ambitious leadership team at Link Logistics. They told me they wanted to transform the sector, and I said, let's go. And that was about 3 years ago. And finally, my educational background is really a mix of engineering and economics. And so that combined with my work experience has enabled me to operate kind of like a corporate chameleon, where I've experienced raising capital to finance assets, structuring big programs, negotiating contracts, running construction. And actually, I even acted as a property manager early on in my career. And so I think really that's allowed me the perspective to be an effective sustainability officer for Link Logistics.
Yeah, you find that you're using all of those skills, I guess.
Every day.
So Link Logistics is an industrial owner and developer. Talk about some of the unique sustainability challenges for industrial properties versus office or retail.
I love this question because it's really fundamental to why I joined Link in the first place. Supply chain, inclusive of real estate, is the hardest to reach sector for decarbonization, and I believe the greatest challenge for sustainability professionals today. But in order to kind of to underscore that statement, I'm going to give you a few fun facts to consider. GRESB, which the listeners may or may not be familiar with, if not, it's the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark, and it serves as the primary ESG benchmark for real estate and infrastructure. But GRESB forecasts that industrial real estate will take twice as long to decarbonize between now and 2050 when compared to all other commercial real estate classes like office and data and the ones that you just mentioned there. And so in my opinion, there are three main themes that are leading to that result. And so first is an inability to properly leverage scale. And industrial real estate is actually the asset class with the lowest energy use intensity or consumption per square foot of all commercial real estate. And so for context, CBEX, the Commercial Building Energy Consumption Survey, which really kind of serves as like the inventory of empirical data for much of the energy and real estate sector. But CBEX shows that industrials are about a 53 energy use intensity. And if that number doesn't mean much to you, by comparison, schools are around 127 and data centers are north of 200. So 53 is low. But according to NAREIT, National Association of Real Estate Investment Trusts, industrial real estate accounts for 31% of all commercial real estate. So the energy consumption at the site level is reasonably low, but the market share is way outsized. And so when you actually do the math, industrial real estate alone accounts for about 4% of all U.S. energy consumption. So said differently, energy and sustainability, I think, is often overlooked at the asset level because there's not a ton of demand side opportunity outside of an LED. But at the portfolio level, there's more opportunity than any other sector. Second is really the industry operating model. So this asset class is operated primarily through triple net leases. And for those of the listeners that aren't familiar with that leasing framework, for sustainability, it means basically that customers pay utility bills directly rather than paying through the landlords. And so that massive energy opportunity at the aggregated portfolio level is often missed because landlords and investors who can deploy capital at scale for energy efficiency measures or allocate working capital to build teams like mine, they typically choose not to do so because customers reap all the utility expense benefits directly. And this is called something, or this is something called the split incentive barrier, which is pretty well known. Some call it the principal agent problem. But, you know, I would also say, in addition to missing the energy opportunity, this triple net principal agent problem has also contributed to a passive customer landlord relationship in the asset class. Because for decades, customers are not very reliant on landlords for basic services. And so to kind of bring this back down to Link, right now we have over 11,000 customers across 16,000 leases, 89% of which are triple net leases. And last one, I'll make this quick. The third is timing. Customers or tenants, they tend to be more short-term focused in this asset class, which is really a function of how inventory is best managed through macroeconomic cycles. But it leads to a shorter term lease as compared to adjacent asset classes like office and data. And so when our typical leases are 5 years or less, the result is a compressed timeframe for amortizing capital and the need to have more sophisticated energy modeling capabilities when considering capital intensive initiatives. And so these three things, they create this composite of issues when there's an ocean of energy and emissions reduction opportunity, but it can't be penetrated. And so I really came here to try and change that. And we're building a really exciting program here at Link where we want to manage utilities directly as landlord to align those financial and environmental interests and course correct some of the legacy issues across the asset class.
So with the net leases and the shorter leases, is there an opportunity to do green leasing?
We do a ton of green leasing. In fact, we won a green leasing award at the gold level, and I believe we've already executed over 70 million square feet of green leases. So we, you know, that's a practice that we absolutely step headlong into, but it doesn't actually correct the split incentive barrier and align interest for customers and landlords to partner to create energy efficiency opportunities. It allows us access to the data on an annualized basis so that we can pursue ENERGY STAR benchmark performance and force rank energy efficiency opportunity across the portfolio, but it doesn't help us deliver programs.
So energy demand for industrial space is growing as automation and on-demand delivery play a bigger and bigger role. How do you build an energy efficient industrial building that can handle increasing energy requirements?
You know, we're really interested in the answer to this question, as you might imagine. And we don't have a crystal ball, but I think we do have some thoughts based on what the data is telling us. And so if you start with the existing load profile of a warehouse, about 55% is allocated to energy consumption. And so while LED lighting is quickly becoming the industry standard, if not already, the execution of that still has some catching up to do. And so while we expect existing, you know, natural gas, HVAC, or other base building infrastructure to electrify, we believe that will net out to a similar energy use intensity per square foot once LEDs are accounted for. And so said otherwise, we think it's going to be flat once all the LEDs are retrofit and all the systems have been electrified. But it's really when you layer in automation, high-speed conveyor systems, robotics, fleet electrification, and other emerging tech that you begin to see that hockey stick growth trend emerge. And so I think, you know, lucky for us, it doesn't happen all at once or overnight. And so we're stepping really headlong into this space through our partnership with Carrier so that we can begin to measure energy consumption and forecast out different kinds of use cases as we begin to support customers who are advancing across the arena of space use maturity. And actually, we're standing up a comprehensive building intelligence program with foundations in energy efficiency. And through that program, we intend to work with our customers to help us understand what should be on that future menu of controls and capabilities as we model out demand requirements for more energy intensive operations. But, you know, I will say it really starts with capturing utility data. And I don't mean the green lease type consumption and demand or expense. I mean incoming service intervals, amperage, panel capacity, kVAR. Right? Like that's the data that we really need to support customers that want to advance into more energy intensive operations. And I think it's further kind of validation and support for our hypothesis at Link that controlling utilities as landlord is paramount for the future of the asset class.
And how do your tenants feel about that?
I'm so happy you asked me that question because we've surveyed them and over 45% of our customers are interested and participating in a landlord managed utility model. We've had several successful pilots underway, and we're going to be launching that in addition to many exciting capabilities here into this year and scaling into next year.
Talk a little bit about the arrangement with Carrier.
Yeah, the way to think about Carrier really is Carrier is the single pane of glass that provides the dashboard and the data environment through which we will interact with our customers to provide all of the different kind of energy and environmental outcomes that we're pursuing. So said otherwise, Carrier, or the foundations of how we are starting to work with Carrier, begins with us deploying a utility data extraction kit. So think, revenue grade shadow meters on the incoming utility meter, pulse portal, cell modem, and then a JACE converter, which is like a BMS light service, building management system for those listeners that are more operations focused. That allows us to start recording high frequency energy interval data. And through that data, we can start to turn analytics and insights back to the customers about their operations use types, but also about energy efficiency opportunity. And we're also pulling that data into a customer portal managed by us that lives within our Link Plus customer portal framework, which is really going to be the main communication tool where we're going to interact with customers about utility bills, demand side opportunities, energy efficiency opportunities, and more. I think the exciting thing about the Carrier program is that once you have the head end in, really the capabilities are almost endless. Customers will be able to light up HVAC units for remote control, start-stop optimization, air quality monitoring, dock door monitoring. So we're really excited about the Carrier partnership and the long-term opportunity, but it really starts with the foundation in extracting building-level utility data.
There's a quote on the Link Logistics website from you that says, "We are not interested in business as usual. We're building Link on disruption and sustainable innovation." You've already talked about next level data. Talk about other ways that Link Logistics is disrupting and innovating.
So I've explained the Carrier piece. Mm-hmm. But I think it's not just the partnership with Carrier and building the data apparatus to support that environment. It's actually what's behind it that's also very disruptive and unique to the asset class. And so think about it like this. We're asking for control of the utilities. Once you have control, you have to have the expertise internal at Link to manage it. So even though we have that single pane of glass through which we're going to, consult with our customers once they enroll, we need sustainability domain expertise. So, and we've established programs in utility operations, energy management, power trading, engineering, project management, energy infrastructure investment, energy data governance that truly are unique to this asset class. And so I think when you boil that down to like the rule of threes again, when you think about what's behind kind of the support environment at Link for the infrastructure we've built, consider this. We've spent 2 years building out an energy and utilities team and the accounting environment to support managing utilities as a landlord at the meter level on behalf of our customers. And that's really what course corrects the triple net leasing barrier mentioned. You can't just say, hey, we want to manage utilities. You have to have the systems and the organizational support to pursue that capability. We've built that and it's taken a lot of time. And the reason is because at our scale, if you combine all of the customer energy consumption across our 500 million square feet, Link would be the sixth largest consumer of energy in the country. That's if you exclude, the GSA and hospitals and schools and some of those, huge networks. But in the private sector, we'd be the sixth largest. And so with that kind of scale, we can buy down rates and deregulated energy markets. We can help our customers better manage energy consumption expenses through that building intelligence tool by providing that kind of energy use dashboard and analytics I just mentioned. But we can really only penetrate that through, through course correcting this split incentive barrier. And then I would say second, really is our approach to projects. Because once you've really built out like the energy and utility domain expertise, and you can identify opportunities for environmental outcomes like energy efficiency, again, like I said, you have to have the core competencies to actually deliver that capability. And so second is really our approach to projects, where we've We've built out internal engineering and project management resources dedicated to our sustainability program. And then on top of that, we've taken, again, years to run RFIs and RFPs to select trusted external partners like Carrier. We also partner with Calpine Energy Solutions on our hedging program. We partner with EMC, Energy Management Collective, on our LED program, for example. But they're the ones that act as extensions to Link to help us deliver in the field. And that way, customers that are enrolled in the Building Intelligence program, where we're paying the bills directly, because we've married the energy analytics with our accounting environment, we can also amortize energy efficiency projects or renewable energy credits, for that matter, against their utility bills, similar to how public utilities function. So this also allows customers to be cash flow positive day one, while we deploy capital, which again aligns financial interests and allows for scalable approaches to delivering enterprise programs, which I have a lot of experience in. And that's, I think, really going to lead to a competitive advantage. And when you really pair that with our third, I think, differentiator here is our approach to technology. And we've built a huge and a robust technology team, as you can imagine, to support all of this. You know, and that helps us both measure the value we're delivering to our customers, Blackstone, and to our internal Link stakeholders. But it helps us create tools to measure velocity, productivity, how effectively are we running our business so that we can mature our capabilities and grow with our customers. And so that's really a big part of how we plan to build trust with our customers, is to leverage our investments in technology to create a more transparent landlord customer relationship in the asset class. And so, you know, across these three things, I believe it's a really powerful sustainability engine we're building. And I really don't think any other real estate company has what we have under the hood right now.
When you talk about supply chain real estate, you're talking about trucks. How do your customers' fleets factor into your sustainability?
We've partnered with a lot of universities, for example, Northwestern University, countless consultants to help us understand really what the fleet opportunity is and what this looks like in the future. I think the short answer is that this is a very dynamic field right now. We're working directly with many of our customers to understand what their, you know, fleet ambitions are. But I think let me give you a few concepts to consider here. First is that much of the current commercial kind of use case for fleets is last mile, right? Short distance box trucks, you know, the like. And you know, the fleet equation is also going to be a function of who owns the fleets. Many of our customers who are the warehouse operators don't actually own the fleets. They have third-party contracts with the DL Pipers and the J.B. Hunts and all the other transportation logistics providers. And so when you think about on-site fleet electrification, what we see is the opportunity to split the incoming service from a metering perspective so that the fleets aren't charging on the real estate house meter. I don't know that you will have warehouse operators paying for their third-party fleets to charge, you know, on the real estate with the current, you know, line diagrams, the way that our incoming utility service is set up. We think that there's an opportunity for fleet charging depots for aggregating electrification and providing custom fleet solutions into the future. But we are still very much in the discovery phase across the fleet question, because we really want to focus on going very deep on the energy and utility opportunity in real estate. And our strategy, to be clear, is build trust with our customers to execute on the basics of energy efficiency and renewable energy integration, so that they will work with us to build fleet solutions that meet their needs in the future.
Scope 1 and 2 first, I guess, and then 3.
You got it.
Speaking of scope 3, how are you strategizing around embodied carbon?
I would say candidly, a consistent approach to embodied carbon is still in our roadmap. You know, I've been in this role 3 years, and actually one of our first commitments, our public ESG commitments, is to pursue a minimum LEED standard across our $9 billion development pipeline. And we're on track to deliver that. And actually, we've already delivered 31 LEED certified projects and are on track with 52 in the pipeline. And we've had a lot of successful pilot projects where we've performed embodied carbon analysis. We've installed one of the first fully functional fleet electrification hardware systems in Northern California. We've used recycled materials and more. And so now that we have executed firmly on the basics of incorporating LEED into our development business, I think we feel pretty confident in the sustainable development platform, and we're going to be looking to mature that part of the business over the next 18 months. And that maturity will absolutely include a more comprehensive approach to embodied carbon.
Regarding Link Logistics sustainability goals, the company is targeting that 100% of its operations be powered by renewable energy sources by 2024. Is that mostly solar currently?
You know, I would say, first of all, we absolutely aim to be at the forefront of sustainability with the leading environmental, social, and governance programs, including some ambitious sustainability targets. And we have six of them, by the way, and we're on track to achieve carbon neutral operations by 2025. And as you mentioned, our 100% renewable energy goal by 2024. You know, the short answer on the question is yes, solar. I think the longer answer is that in my prior life, I managed about $500 million in annual energy expenses. And I've learned firsthand how dynamic the retail energy supply sector has become. And so right now we're working in partnership with Calpine, who I mentioned earlier when I was talking about bringing in partners who provide us a core competency and trusted consultation to physically consume renewable energy while allowing for stabilization against volatile energy markets. And when I say physically, I mean, we're working to ensure that our renewable energy goal is not just a paper trade for an offset. We are truly trying to use our demand profile to catalyze new energy asset development in regions where we operate without locking ourselves and our customers into long-term agreements. And so it's not quite as simple as saying, sure, yes, we plan to consume solar energy, because we are pretty sophisticated in our power program. Right now, we're trading power at 26 different load zones and deregulated energy markets. And because our long-term approach is not offset-based, you know, it's consumption-based. And we see some opportunity to play in the locational marginal pricing indices to make that happen on a very innovative basis.
Speaking of markets, what are the challenges of implementing portfolio-wide solutions, considering different regulations, different grids, and different energy markets?
Gosh, I'd say right now and over the next couple of years, I think the greatest challenge is really going to be interconnection of new energy assets into the power grid and how slow transmission planning functions across the country. So those of us who are large consumers of power, specifically electricity, who have access to capital, we typically want to vertically integrate to own and operate energy assets dedicated for our own consumption. Meanwhile, you know, you have new emissions, you know, sensitive regulations that have resulted in baseload power generating facility retirement across the country. And that's led to some destabilization of energy markets and some lower energy reliability across the different grids where we consume power, as you pointed out. And so I think when you couple that with the rapidly increasing demand for power, it's going to lead to a really interesting environment. And an interconnection specifically, you know, right now can take months or even years in some energy markets, depending on the capacity of the system that you're developing and more. And then you have transmission planning is far behind that, which we need to relieve congestion and some of the ancillary prices that are affecting power rates across the country. And I also believe that in the REC market, there's going to be some speculation over the next 10 years. And so it's going to be fascinating to watch, but really we need collaboration across the board to help solve some of these issues, because private organizations like Link can act as a catalyst, but we really need regulation and market support to make actual progress against these commitments to fast track new renewable capacity on the grid, which is really, truly how you decarbonize real estate, is decarbonization of the power grid.
Sam, this has been really great. One last question. As a media person, I have to ask, what are you reading or listening to when it comes to sustainability, business, or for pleasure?
I love this question. So I'm a huge Audible person. My New Yorkers who are listening, you know, you probably commute just as much as I do. So that's my primary way of consuming. So I'll give you a few. On the work side, just because I oscillate pretty heavily between work stuff and then this is embarrassing. It's science fiction. I love sci-fi. I'm a total sci-fi geek. But on the work side, Some of my favorites that I recently listened to, Scrum by Jeff Sutherland. I think it's great, really kind of meant for product management world, but I think a lot of relevancies to business management. And then How to Think Like a Rocket Scientist, I think is a great one, which talks about the creation of the waterfall working framework that NASA used to pursue the Mercury and Apollo missions. So those are two wonderful ones that are kind of work related. I recently finished this trio kind of space opera series that starts with Red Rising. And that was like, couldn't put it down. I was on vacation this summer and I went through all three series in the novel in like a week. It was a ton of fun. So if you like sci-fi, fantasy, space stuff, check out Red Rising. Can't remember who it's by at the top of my head, but those are my picks.
I guess in your line of work, you have to be future minded, futuristic.
I never thought about it like that, but I guess that makes sense.
All right, Sam, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining me on Sustainability Street. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. And before you go, I want to tell you about an opportunity. The CPE Executive Council is a group of industry leaders who exchange ideas about trending real estate concerns, and those discussions are later posted on our website. If you're interested in joining the council, please contact Editor-in-Chief Jessica Fuhr at jessica.fuhr@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.